Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
Sam Hamm.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
What's right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, we don't have tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, national writer on the NBA at The Athletic, here with my guys, Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. Fred, we're going to get to you in a moment. This is going to be a Fred in the Spotlight podcast because we are going heavy on the Eastern Conference, talking trades, talking on-court action, starting with the Wizards, Fred's old stomping grounds. But Slater, I just have to check in on you. This is a wellness check. We're on Zoom. The people, I might even see this on YouTube. You look like you had a tough night. You doing okay?
Had a great night. You had a tough night watching some NFL football. I had a great night. I just, you know, a lot of times great nights impact your mornings.
That's a good way of putting it.
Listeners don't need to know this. I'll bring it for the next hour.
They care about you as a human being. And so first and foremost, they're concerned. And secondly, they just want to know that a little bit more about you other than the guy who covers the Warriors and kills it, you know, every time he picks up a pen, so to speak. But Cam Brown, huh? Am I allowed to go down that road? Cam Brown pretty good?
If you want, yes. I took my wife to a Kane Brown concert last night in Chase Center. You know, did the little doubleheader, little Warriors Nets for work on Saturday night, Kane Brown Sunday night. It was good. It was a good time.
See, I've tried to learn over the years, Fred. This is for the Athletic Pod Network and the Jade Hoy production and Andrew Schleck production. This is the banter segment of, I'm just trying to pick up things here and there. This is what we're doing, Jade. This is for you. Fred, what do you got? Any concerts last night?
He's an
expert. No, I'm just thrilled that the Jets beat the Bengals this year. So that's the closest they've come to the Super Bowl in a decade. So
linear champions.
Exactly.
The AFC.
The Bengals in the Super Bowl. What's the equivalent of the Bengals in the Super Bowl in the NBA? The Wizards?
As somebody who has, and don't worry, folks, this will become a basketball podcast, but as somebody who has lost touch with most of the NFL over the years, other than the Niners, who I still kind of stand for, I was stunned recently when I was really late to the party learning that the Bengals had not done anything since the Icky Shuffle was still a thing. Like, that blew me away. I hadn't realized that they hadn't even been in the playoffs in however many decades that's been.
Yeah, Sam, can we out you on your Coldplay concert you're coming up to? I feel like I got to throw.
Oh, we're doing the concert thing. Yeah, but that's a bummer because they rescheduled it. COVID has impacted the Coldplay tour, and so now it's right in the heart of the NBA playoffs, which is not the way that it was designed. So stay tuned on that front.
All right, let's get to the Cincinnati Bengals of the NBA. The Washington Wizards
segue by Slater.
They need Joe Burrow, though.
They need Joe Burrow. Yes. They don't have Joe Burrow. They have Bradley Beal. And Fred has got some perspective and stuff that we're going to get into, again, within the context of, here's my two cents on the East, guys. And as we talked about this week's show, kind of where my head's at. You know, you just see in the standings all of a sudden that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, what was the narrative? Man, the East is so much stronger than the West this year. You know, times have changed, powerhouses in the East, you know, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly even coming up without Ben Simmons. But a lot of those teams are slumping. The Nets are having a very hard time. No Kevin Durant, no James Harden now. He's got a wrist situation. A lot of teams going the wrong way in the East. But then here come the Hawks, winning a bunch of games. Here come some squads on the bottom. But those Wizards that we're going to start with are on the outside looking in of the play-in tournament. The Spencer Dinwiddie addition has not gone all that well. Some reporting this week from the Ringer, Kevin O'Connor, about him possibly being on the move. But Fred, give us the lay of the land from your old beat. What do you think might lie ahead for the Wizards?
Yeah, so they're 23-26. They started off 10-3, and they're 13-23. Since that start. You know how we always talk about when we're evaluating title contenders, we look at the very basic resume and we say, okay, if you're top 10 offense, you're top 10 defense, then, you know, you're in the conversation, right? You are balanced and legitimately good on both sides of the ball. I feel like we need to have a conversation about the opposite of that, the lottery contenders. And the Wizards right now are 23-26, but right now they're bottom 10 offense and bottom 10 defense, which does not bode well for them for the rest of the season. They have so many guys, like they're really struggling with their rotation. Daniel Gafford, they just gave Daniel Gafford a $40 million 3-year extension, and he's out of the rotation now. They had a game a couple of weeks ago where Denny Avdija, who was the number 9 pick a couple of years ago and has been really good defensively, didn't play. Now I've got Beal dealing with this wrist injury, and I think the questions as we approach the trade deadline are legitimately coming up. You know, Bradley Beal is an unrestricted free agent after this season. It's finally happening. It feels like he's been a pending unrestricted free agent for the last 2.5 decades, and it's finally coming up to the point where the contract is expiring. And I think there are questions about what to do about Bradley Beal and what's about to come of his future. We've heard forever about Beal wanting to stay and Beal wanting to be there, but I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk that he's just coming back and re-signing for the 5-year, you know, 35% max that he's eligible for come this summer. And I am very curious to see what they're going to end up doing here.
You know what should be noted? He's not having a good season. I mean, he's shooting, he just got over 30% from three. He's currently right at 30.0% from three. I think maybe career low in overall field goal percentage too, or maybe not career low, but worse since like he was second, third year in the league. And it's just, the story of the last couple of seasons, even through their struggles, even through kind of their tug of war with Russell Westbrook, was like, well, he's still like, he's leading the league in scoring. He's, you know, this all NBA force. I'm not necessarily sitting here saying like he's declining, but as we discuss, you know, some mega max that the Wizards might have to get him, should the Wizards get off of him before, you know, he tries to get off of them, basically. Like, he's just like, where is he at right now in his career? Is this the start of a downturn for him, or just an offseason?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's really interesting with him, you look at the efficiency numbers, and you're right, like the effective field goal percentage is a true shooting percentage, or they're the lowest. He's always been very high volume, but really good efficiency, 58-60% true shooting, which is a really good number. And that's really fallen this year. In part, I think he's been one of the big guys who's been affected by the new fouling rules. His free throw rate is pretty substantially down. I think that's hurt him. And you're right, he's just not hitting the three. And I kind of thought when they were 10-3 at the start of the year, like, okay, they're not this good. But I kind of thought, okay, maybe they're a 45-win team, because even as these other guys start to regress, like Beal shooting like, you know, 25% from three at the time, he's going to start to play like the Bradley Beal that we know. And he's just been down this year. I think you're right. I think you have to question 5-year, 35% max for a guy coming off a year like that. I wonder, though, you know, for for years and years and years, there's been the talk of, does Beal want to stay? And I feel like the whole league kind of got to a point where it was just like, okay, he wants to do it. He wants to be loyal to the Wizards. He really values that fifth year, as I reported many times when I was, on the beat covering them. He really values having, control and power within the organization. And he thinks it's very important to him to kind of be the guy within the realm of franchise history. I remember talking to him. This was shoot around opening day 2019. He was pissed at me. He had just extended and he was pissed at me for asking him about what loyalty meant to him. Cause he said he re-signed for loyalty and legacy. I can't remember. I was asking him either what loyalty or what legacy meant to him. And he was annoyed because he thought the insinuation was me saying, well, you didn't really do it for loyalty and legacy. This was in Dallas. And they had just put that silhouette of Dirk on the court. And he's staring at that silhouette. And he finally says, you know what legacy is? That's legacy. And he points to the silhouette of Dirk. He's like, that's what I want. It's beyond just your number hanging in the arena. It's the silhouette on the floor. That's what I want here. But at the same time, they've fallen off. And I think the organization has spoken with a lot of confidence about their ability to bring him back. You know, their president, Tommy Shepard, just did an interview a couple weeks ago with Josh Robbins, our Wizards beat reporter, who does a great job, saying the plan is the same as it's always been. But I don't think, from just people I've talked to, I'm not as confident now that he is definitely going to come back. I wouldn't be sitting here betting my life on the fact that Bradley Beal is on the Wizards next season, either because a trade comes or a sign and trade comes or whatever else, even though I'm still making them the favorites.
To your point, Fred, and great perspective there as always, you know, Brad's idea of being the Dirk of DC, if you will, I get that in spirit, you know what I mean? But I think the tipping point that we've reached now comes largely as a result of, if you take a quick second to compare the career arcs of Bradley Beal and Dirk Nowitzki, just to stay with that for a second, I mean, he's 28 years old, Brad is, and I'm looking here at good old Basketball Reference. By the time Dirk was 28 years old, obviously he had not won a championship yet. He'd been in one finals. He, roughly speaking, he had competed in about 13 or 14 individual playoff series. And you just had this long history of being in the mix, you know what I mean? And so the level of optimism and hope for somebody like Dirk, you know, that kind of success, while not ultimate success, is going to keep you from looking other places and thinking that the grass might be greener. That's just not been Brad's experience. And now, you know, more specific to this season, I wondered, as far as his play, what are you seeing beyond things like the foul changes and things of that nature? Because this is really stark to have this kind of decline. You mentioned the true shooting percentage. He's around 53% this year. It's his worst since the 2014-15 campaign. I would love to know, you know, we all know that Philly has had Bradley Beal on their list of Ben Simmons trade targets for quite some time.
He's among the 25, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I would think he's among the five. You know what I mean? Like, well, not the five. Ooh. Let me back that up.
Over Giannis?
No, that's the thing. The list is always deceiving. I know what you're... Yes. Because, yes, you know, Giannis and...
There's 20 players who are just, like, unobtainable.
Right, but
like,
they are on the list, yeah, because that's how the process works, pun intended.
LeBron James on the list.
Although Jokic, like, is Jokic on the list? You got a big fella. Who knows? But I wonder if the Sixers...
I would say you would maybe trade Ben Simmons for Nikola Jokic right now and figure the rest out later. I think you might do that.
Jokic together. Talk about Twin Towers. But like Brad's current play, and you wonder how that impacts the calculus within the Sixers, analysis of the situation.
Sure. I mean, look, if you break it down further and you mentioned Spencer Dinwiddie, I think part of the reason the reports like that come out about Spencer Dinwiddie isn't just because of individual play. Like him and Beal, they've had their moments where they've been good together, but those guys have not consistently figured out a way to have strong on-court chemistry. And you look at Beal's numbers with Dinwiddie on the floor and Dinwiddie's numbers with Beal on the floor, and then you look at them without the other guy, you look at the team numbers, however you want to look at it, like those guys have not meshed together like the Wizards would hope that they would. And I think that's definitely been part of it. From a basketball perspective, if you put Beal in Philadelphia, by the way, he's perfect with Embiid. I mean, he's a good pick and roll player. I have to imagine the three-point shot comes back. One of the weird trends of Beal's career is that he came into the league as like the guy who he was compared to was kind of off-ball Ray Allen. I mean, that's who he was supposed to be, right? And then he turns into this kind of ball-dominant combo guard who's running pick and rolls and running an offense. You know, there was a game earlier this year where all their point guards were out. He had to play point the whole time, and he had 17 assists. I do think he's a better passer than he's ever been now. He's a legitimately good passer. And
career high in assists this year, 6.6.
Yeah, I mean, he's really become a very good passer. And so, you know, I think he would work tremendously with Joel Embiid. By the way, those two guys have the same individual trainer, and I know they have a personal relationship because of that. But I just, you know, I don't know how much of his season has to do with, you know, Wizards specific context versus something else that, you know, is just basketball related or life related or whatever. But he's definitely had, you know, a down season compared to the past couple of years when he was averaging an efficient 30.
Sixth worst 3-point shooter in basketball among guys who've taken at least 200, right? I'm talking about high volume guys. He's the sixth worst, and Dinwiddie is the 11th worst. I mean, those are your two high volume scorers, and they're can't threes. I mean, you cannot have a good offense if that's going on. And you know, when we talk about Wizards specific, you know, situations, to me last year, the problem was, you know, kind of the Westbrook anchor next to him. And you felt like Beal was having this monster season, but the environment around him was dragging him down. Well, they made a really good Westbrook trade. I mean, I don't know how many times we've come on the podcast and you know, really kind of hat tip Tommy Shepard for that move. Kuzma's had a good season. I think Harrell's helped, and KCP's a solid player. It to me, like, their record right now is more reflective of like what we're talking about, his poor play and like the bad fit with him and Dinwiddie, which we thought was going to be a much better.
Yeah, I think they're in a position right now to where, I mean, we're recording this Monday afternoon, so 10 days out from the trade deadline. I think they're in a position right now to where no matter what approach they take, whether they're 100% confident that Beal is coming back and we're operating as if Beal is re-signing this summer, or whether they think he's not coming back, I expect them to be very active in talks over these next 10 days. Like, I don't know if they'll end up pulling off a move or not, because who knows, sometimes the rug gets pulled out from under you, or you don't end up, you know, getting somebody for the value that you think they're worth or whatever. But I expect them to be very active, because even if they think, you know, Bradley Beal is 100% here, or Bradley Beal is 95% here, we just have to push it over the edge to show that we can really be competitive, make it into the play-in, which will eventually make us, you know, throw us into the playoffs if you win there. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they went after one of the conventional big names that are out there, you know, a Sabonis. I'm sure they're going to be active in there, and a number of other names that I feel like they could get involved with, just seeing how they can make their team better, because they have a lot of guys. Like, they have like 13 guys. You know, like, Aaron Holiday is not playing much. He's had a pretty good year. Daniel Gafford was out of the rotation this past game. I don't think they would want to trade Gafford. They really like him. But they have three centers, and Harrell's expiring. Thomas Bryant is expiring. You don't need three centers who demand playing time. You know, there are moves that they can make, 3-for-1 moves, things like that, which could bring in a quality player that could help them. And it doesn't necessarily have to destroy your future either.
Well, and it's got to be disheartening for the organization if you have potentially the combination of Brad having second thoughts again, like we kind of thought he did, you know, over the summer and when we were monitoring that situation more, with the, you know, the status in the standings and the fact that you're seeing yet again with the new iterations built around Bradley Beal, that the ceiling is not nearly as high as you were hoping it would be. The time does come where, you know, maybe it is time to move on. So who knows if that could be an interesting wrinkle here at the deadline. Guys, we are going to take a quick break and keep it in the East when we get back. As you know, especially when it's an Eastern Conference heavy tampering pod, it's going to have a 6 degrees of Ben Simmons component. So next up, we will chat about the Brooklyn Nets, who Slater and I saw over the weekend when they played the Warriors, and try to break their situation down. We will be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
All right, gentlemen, let's talk some Brooklyn Nets. So they roll into the Chase Center on Saturday night. Barely lost. Wow, why am I drawing a complete blank? Slater, who won that game?
The Warriors won by a few points. The Warriors were up big, and then Kyrie Irving was awesome in this third quarter, brought them back, really actually gave Brooklyn the lead momentarily, forced the Warriors to switch up coverage, really blitz them with a more aggressive scheme. And I think Brooklyn's flaws down the stretch showed when they don't have Harden and Durant. I don't really love the rest of the roster. I mean, no Joe Harris too. Like, if they are fully healthy come postseason, I do think they're dangerous, but you can just, I don't know about you, Sam, but clearly you don't remember too
much. I was
going
to say, Fred, you
game.
Like how I just had to just admit my rustiness there, and Slater, who had claimed to also be rusty, just busted out his like beautiful mind routine with every detail of the game. I do remember Klay Thompson.
Well, I wrote about the game in detail on The Athletic.
And I hit the road
subscribe.
After talking to people after the game, so that's where my head was at. Klay hit a big three. That was, in terms of moments, that was the biggest moment of the night. I thought it was actually Klay's, kind of biggest clutch shot, and the crowd certainly responded to it. And Kyrie had a mea culpa after the game because of his foul on Klay, where he admitted that he essentially kind of had his foot in Klay's path, and that was another big moment as well. But more the macro look at the Nets, like always, it was just good for me to get closer to their group and to try to have a few conversations, to read the room a little bit and get a sense of their mood within the context of this season and the trade deadline. So that night, James Harden was completely on track to play. And then fairly close to tip off, they say that he had a wrist strain where they had done the MRI.
Was it hand or wrist? I mean, they say something about the hand flare.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, wrists can be hand.
I mean, he's wearing a big brace on the wrist. The MRI was clean, but they had seen, the strain in there. So, that's obviously not ideal. And then it was the Kyrie show. But it's just crazy to see. For one, they've lost four in a row, I think 11 out of 17. They're not playing very well. They've been keeping their heads above water. The Durant injury obviously kills him, and he's out for quite some time. I don't know what the ripple effect, if any, might be at the deadline. But James Harden was in the news a lot this past week. Shams Charania and I had reported on Philly starting to have some level of optimism about having a crack at him this summer, and the idea that they would hold on to Ben Simmons because of that, the kind of dream scenario for Daryl Morey. And then James in general, reporting from Bleacher Report and other places about his happiness level and does he want to be a part of this Nets program. Fred, it's a little bit analogous. The Beal situation is evolving and it's not as intense right now, seemingly, but it's a little analogous to the Beal Wizards dynamic, where teams, obviously, when there is a chance for that player to leave town in the forthcoming offseason, you would really like to have clarity about where that guy's head is at. And so the idea that James is potentially one foot in and trying to see how this playoff run goes before he decides what he wants to do next is making a Nets season that was already pretty tricky even trickier.
Right. I mean, the big difference is if the Nets win a title, anything's worth it, right? Like, you do this to go get a title, whereas the Wizards are in a position to where, like, they're far off from that. I mean, they're many, many moves away from that. The Nets are weird because they're kind of living out the situation that that like Slater's brought up on this podcast and many other people have of, are they just better off if they get the 5 or the 6 seed, avoid the play-in tournament, and then they have Kyrie for a game 7 in the playoffs. And now that they're kind of diving and they're only a couple of games out of first, I think they're 2-5 without KD. And I think they're sitting right now 6th at the time that we're recording this podcast. It's like, does it feel like they're going to be better off in the long term? Are we just going to look back on this? And if they get the 5 and they have to play Milwaukee in the first round, but they're able to use Kyrie in a game 7 against Milwaukee in the first round or something like that, then, which by the way, would potentially be an unfreaking believable first round series if it ends up happening. But if they have to play that and they need Kyrie in a game 7, any of these, like, are we going to look back on this and be like, of course they're better off.
Fred, you would have a better pulse on this than I would, but I kind of think by April he's going to be allowed to play in home games. I just feel like societally that's the way the direction might be going. We'll see, but that's just that to me. That's my guess. And then wider scope, I think the Brooklyn Nets, because of what I've seen from the rest of their roster, will not win a title unless they have their 3 main guys healthy and available the full playoffs. Now, if they do, I mean, you saw Kyrie the other night, Sam, like he's unbelievable. But if they don't, like this, their rotational drop off below those 3 is just it's hard to imagine.
You mentioned Joe Harris being out too, which is huge.
And LaMarcus Aldridge got hurt the other day.
Yep,
and
yep.
He has been. Man, he should be on 6th man of the year ballots this year. He's been great. His numbers on long twos this year. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge, we've always seen his mid-range game is so sweet, but he's like having the best mid-range season of his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like he's had, particularly when you compare it to Blake Griffin, a better season. But at the same time, I mean, you see it the other night. I mean, he's attacked. He's slow defensively. Like, I worry about him in a playoff series, you know, in against a Milwaukee, like Giannis at the center lineup. Like, there's just flaws throughout the roster that can only be masked if those 3 are available and healthy together. And what's the percentage chance that that's likely? That they're all 3 going to be playing like on a nightly basis come April, May.
Slater, I wonder, I think that's their only chance. Real quick, since you mentioned it, you know, what cues are you kind of drawing from in terms of your suspicion that that Kyrie might be able to play in the home games? That surprises me.
Well, like San Francisco, San Francisco just recently kind of is beginning alterations more for like, negative, you know, changing their rules as maybe we get out of this next wave, as society really kind of advances to a point that, endemic is the word that I know we've even used on this podcast. But I just think that I could see the requirements being lessened or something being worked out. Again, maybe Fred has a better sense on that. Maybe he's following the governmental maneuvers a bit more than me in New York City. I would say don't be shocked if those rules are altered by playoff time.
I think any of them is possible. I honestly have no idea. I know the new mayor here, Eric Adams, has said that he's going to continue the policy, but who knows? Things change quickly with this thing, and that's 2.5 months into the future. So
even more so. Yeah, and it also, from a media standpoint, man, this team is tricky to cover because we are suckers for kind of, you like to have themes throughout a regular season with these different teams where you track their story and their narrative, and it's like these Nets, you kind of have to just at some point accept the reality that come mid-April, it's going to be like the equivalent of a pickup basketball game where they just hope that, enough of the really good players are ready to be thrown on the floor. And chemistry is probably not going to be what they had hoped it would be. But like you said, Slater, if those particular 3 guys are available and they put their sneakers on and they get out there, they're probably not getting off the floor for a long time. When I talked to the Nets the other night, I mean, for what it's worth, and I'm not unfortunately around them very often, but some people I know on the team sent the message that they were actually handling all the drama pretty well. It wasn't really kind of coming within their walls. The Harden news wasn't rocking anybody. It wasn't causing friction internally. Seems like they're rolling with it other than not playing all that well. And then you kind of ask the question of, how much does that really matter?
Yeah. The other Nets thing is that early in the season when they were really rolling and there was no Kyrie at all, part of the reason was that their defense majorly outplayed expectations. And if you looked at some of the analytics, the Seth Partnows of the world were predicting a regression in the second half of the season, and that's really come. They're back around the middle of the pack now in defense. But I honestly think part of it is that Kevin Durant hasn't been there for seven of those games too. And KD was having a hell of a defensive season. I mean, he's been really, really good for them defensively this year. I think he's probably their best defensive player. And so, you know, him and Brown. So I think not having him there is, it's so much bigger than just losing the guy who can get any shot that he wants and hit it at a ridiculously high percentage. Like that has massive defensive consequences too.
It's also kind of deceiving the East in general. You know, they're 29-20. You know what I mean? Like sixth in the East sounds awful. But 29-20, if they were in the West, it would be good for fourth. So we'll see if they can pull out of this. Let's pivot, guys, unless you had more to get on the Nets front. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the ATL Hawks. You got this team that made the conference finals appearance last year, you know, a little bit of a Cinderella run, and then has been fairly disastrous all year long. You know, a lot of trade rumors coming out of Atlanta regarding, you know, a number of different guys, but, you know, Cam Reddish obviously goes to New York, but, you know, the John Collins situation and the Hawks having been engaged on the Ben Simmons front, you know, didn't want to take back Tobias Harris. A lot to unpack there, but my goodness, they go from losing five in a row, falling to 17-25, to now reeling off, what is it, seven in a row. So they got a game tonight against Toronto, so that'll be over by the time this pod comes out. But what are you seeing there? The defense has gotten a lot better, and I do think there is a ripple effect on trade discussions because I think there is a declining motivation to do anything big out that way, and specifically with John Collins, because all of a sudden it feels like they might have figured something out.
Well, I mean, a little reminiscent of last year. You know, they were they're 24-25 right now. Last year they were 23-24. I'm looking at it right now. They fired their coach, right? I mean, they had an interim coach. Like, it was going pretty disastrously last season, and it felt panicky around the All-Star or around trade deadline. And then they just turned it on and, you know, made this crazy run to the East Finals that probably raised expectations too high for them this season. But this is sports, right? You know, winning changes everything. Winning changes every situation. Just like we were talking about Bradley Beal earlier, if the Wizards rattle off six out of their next seven, they're probably not trading Bradley Beal, and everyone will be in high spirits around there. So, yeah, seven in a row for Atlanta. They look pretty good. Maybe, Fred, you want to dive into what is going so right for them, but they're winning, and that matters.
So I have a prediction. Based on, to be clear to anyone who might be listening, this prediction is based on absolutely no intel at all, which are the best kinds of predictions.
That always means there's intel behind it, people.
There's absolutely no intel. Don't listen to Sam. He has no idea what he's talking about. This is just about from watching the Hawks. So the piece you always hear about in trade conversations of all the Hawks young guys, it's always John Collins, right? That's the one who always comes up is, oh, could he be moved somewhere? I wonder if the conversation this summer shifts to Clint Capela, because Onyeka Okongwu has been unbelievable during this streak. He has been incredible for them, and we talk about their defense looking so much better, and it's been for various reasons. Chris Kirshner just wrote a really good piece, I think for this morning, about how Trae Young's defense has been better over this stretch, but Okongwu is really hitting another level defensively, protecting the rim. They can switch him. And, you know, this is the number six pick from last year who everything, you know, he got hurt and he's come back and everything is just starting to click for him defensively. You saw flashes of it last year in the playoffs when he guarded Giannis in the Eastern Conference Finals and really did, for a rookie, an excellent job guarding, you know, a two-time MVP. I think he's been great, and you just watch him play. You watch how versatile he is. He's still on a rookie contract, and right now they extended Capela, so they can't trade him until this summer. He's not eligible. But I wonder, come this summer, if one of their goals is just going to be, got to open up minutes for Okongwu, because he's been great. DeAndre Hunter, coming back from his injury, has been very big for them as well. know, he's their premier wing defender and does a really good job for them. And I think just having those guys playing at the level that they have adds this amount of feistiness and physicality and just pure defensive ability. Like they just, those guys just have pure defensive strength, length, athleticism. They're a whole different level. I think they're fifth in points allowed per possession over the 7-game winning streak. But I don't know, I love watching Okongwu. I think he's a good player.
No, you're right. They're fifth in defense during this stretch. You know, those are I think you're on point with the Capella analysis for sure, Fred, because he was great for him last year, but their price tag roster wise is pretty extreme. And I think in general, they're probably looking for ways to lighten that up down the road, especially if they got young players, you know, like him coming up and doing good things. The Collins thing, like so many situations around the league, is going to be one we got to keep monitoring, but there's a human element where reminds me a little bit of Miles Turner in Indiana, where it's a young player who has a kind of a grander vision for his own career and his own path than the team that he plays for, you know, would like a bigger role. I mean, even during this stretch, you know, you look and John Collins is averaging 15 points a game, you know, getting 11 shots, third on the team. You know, even Bogdanovich is shooting more than he is. That's the kind of stuff that is always going to pull at the Collins situation. And the question is, you know, is he going to be happy long-term continuing to play this role? Or does he think that, you know, he's got, I mean, it's a little bit like Jeremy Grant going to Detroit and leaving Denver, right? Like it's, and these guys, it's well within their right to try to chase that kind of a role. So we'll see what happens there. But I do think the Hawks in general are going to be a big part of the trade deadline discussion. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. All right, guys, let's jump from Atlanta over to Milwaukee, the reigning champions. The Bucks are, you know, that early on this season, we, I think, gave them a well-deserved, not a pass, but like this kind of this card, if you will, for, you know, reigning champions are allowed to not coast through the regular season, but to prioritize the bigger picture. And Giannis, you know, had talked at length with our Eric Name, Bucks beat writer extraordinaire, about, you know, kind of how he had learned the art of kind of getting everything set in the regular season and not always having a results-based outlook, if you will, on your program. And so Giannis, you know, older and wiser, was looking at the regular season differently. And that's all well and good, but then you look up and it's late January and, you know, there's no alarm bells here. They're 31 and 21 as we record here, but just not as dominant as we probably expected them to be. And admittedly, Eric got my attention recently because he knows that team better than anybody when he was, you know, kind of declaring on Twitter that this team was, he just didn't think was as good as last year. They're playing smaller a lot. You know, they just got absolutely smoked by Denver and, you know, the Nuggets are playing great ball, but you still have no Jamal Murray, no Michael Porter Jr. And you're losing by 36 to the Nuggets. What are you guys seeing from the champs?
Yeah. You know, they got wrecked by Denver last night. And speaking of Eric wrote an interesting piece about their strategy against Nikola Jokic, which they were doubling him the whole game.
Yep.
And Jokic just sliced him up, 15 assists. And, you know, he wrote about the risks in constantly double teaming the guy who might be literally the best passer in the world, right? And all I'm thinking, as you know, and I see some of it, I'm not going to sit there and watch them lose by 36 the whole time, but I see some of it. And all I'm thinking the whole time is they're doubling because they don't feel like they have anyone who can guard him one-on-one, which just makes me think, man, they miss Brooke Lopez. Like, them losing Brooke Lopez, I think, has been a really understated part of their problems this year. They're down in defense. Well, it's because they have a guy who they don't rely on him quite as much as they did 2 years ago in terms of his rim protection and all that. But part of the reason their defense was so good is because you have Brooke Lopez just being in a wall in front of the rim all the time, and you have Giannis being able to help from the weak side and guard in every possible way that you can at an elite level, and he's unbelievable protecting shots at the rim, and it's just so difficult to get dunks and layups against them. You know, if Brooke Lopez is there, in all likelihood, they're not doubling Nikola Jokic with the aggression that they did in that game. You just have Lopez be a giant person standing there and fighting against Jokic and just do your best, and you're more easily able to take away passing lanes. I think there are just so many moments. You know, their defense is worse this year, and I think part of that probably has to do with the championship, you know, coast effect. But like, not having Brook Lopez is a really big deal. He's become one of the best defensive centers in the league, and he's really important to them. And I just, I don't think they're as good if they don't have Brook Lopez, and you have a 7-footer in his mid-30s with a back injury. It makes me worry about their viability moving forward. You know, if the same Brook Lopez comes back before the playoffs, then, you know, obviously this point is moot, but I just find it difficult to watch them. Even when I saw them over the weekend play the Knicks, and they played well in that game, and Giannis was outrageous, and they beat the Knicks. It was just like, they are just a different animal when they don't have Brook. He's so important to them, and I feel like that should be part of the conversation.
No, for sure. And I know within all that, listen, basketball is not a boxing match, and we can't look at it that way. But I have to admit, when I read Eric's piece about the way they guarded Jokic, it did drive me nuts in terms of just the simple idea of Giannis not guarding him. You know, you're reading about Bobby Portis being on Jokic, you're reading about Jrue Holiday being on him, and it was a little bit of a flashback to their series in the bubble against Miami, where, I mean, honestly, I'll never forget, even on a personal note, you know, sitting down with Jimmy at Heat practice, asking him very bluntly if he was surprised that Giannis didn't guard him, and to have a player of Jimmy's caliber just kind of look in the eye and say, yeah, I was, you know. And so that was obviously a thing that was attached to Giannis before, you know, he led his team to a championship and you know, had moments where he did lock down the other team's best player. I mean, I know, again, we're sitting here in late January. Giannis doesn't have to be out there proving himself in a regular season game, but it was strange, I think. But then that begs the question of, with Lopez out, I mean, is Giannis supposed to put that cape on every night too? You know, that's probably not what's best for their program. But I think you're right. I mean, they obviously did the DeMarcus Cousins experiment for a while, and defensively that's just, you know, eons away from what Brook is giving you, and that wasn't the solution. But that is for sure one of the reasons I think they are, you know, gettable, if you will, when it comes to somebody knocking them off the crown.
Yeah, Giannis's greatest strength is also just what he does off the ball, right? It's the way he helps from the weak side. It's his weak side shot blocking. It's how he gets into passing lanes, and that kind of stuff gets neutralized when you put him on a lead ball handler too.
But isn't there a threshold there? And it's, you might disagree, Fred, but like, where's that threshold of like, all right, the reigning MVP is just crushing us. Like, Giannis, can we just throw you on him for a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, it was the same thing in the Brooklyn playoff series last year when Durant was just going off, right? Same exact conversation.
Right.
That's fair. Just adding color.
I wanted to get my DeMarcus Cousins stat off. That's no, he's been on a few 10 days. He's like he's near the league lead in technicals. I just think it's funny. sorry. yeah, I mean, like, the center's their issue. Bobby Portis is just like, you know, can't necessarily hold up against the Jokic's of the world. But, you know, there's no Nikola Jokic in the Eastern Conference. He ain't going to have to see him in the playoffs. And when I look at the Eastern Conference and as bunched up as it is, and as much as I'm doubting Brooklyn's ability to get those three on the floor together for an entire playoffs, I like them more than any team. Now Miami, you know, to me, Miami is probably their biggest threat. But maybe it's because I went to Milwaukee for a Warriors Bucks game, and the Bucks just railroaded the Warriors, and it was super impressive. But I think it's mostly just malaise of the season. It's, you know, they're coasting a little bit. Yeah, I mean, Sam, I remember just being around those Warriors teams post title. They coasted. I mean, this is just what
that's a terrible teams that's do. A terrible parallel, actually. My guy, I love you. I'm gonna push back on that one. When they win in 2015, I mean, they come out and just absolutely decimate the league in the next regular season. You know what I mean? Like, you won one chip. It's not time to coast.
Yeah, you're not a dynasty, but also, I don't know that it's not. I mean, look, the Lakers won a title and kind of cruised to 7 last year. And yes, that was the big issue. So again, my parallels are not going well. But I don't, like, to me, the Brook Lopez in the center situation, like, certainly is a concern that they I don't even know. Like, it's going to be tough for them to correct. Maybe that is their soft spot coming to the playoffs. But I don't see any, like, big-time alarm bells in Milwaukee.
All right, guys. We're going to take another quick break. And on the other side, keep diving into the East. There's too many teams to get through everybody. But I want to hear your thoughts on the Cleveland Cavaliers, because we do not talk about them enough. And Kelsey Russo is doing good work out there. And Kobe Altman, and Kelsey, of course, is our beat writer. Kobe, the guy who runs the team in the front office, doing a fantastic job. And JB Bickerstaff, absolute shocking surprise story of the season. And we don't give them a lot of run on the tampering pod. And so let's get into that on the other side of this break.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, gentlemen, the Cleveland Cavaliers picked a really good time to have themselves a turnaround story. They are hosting the All-Star game. And so I'm actually on track, you know, barring any unforeseen changes, to go to said All-Star game later next month, and they'll be hosting the league, and they get to show off, you know, their actual team, which is not something we thought that we'd be saying at this point in the post-LeBron James era. It's stunning to me.
How many All-Stars will they have? I mean, Garland probably, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think Garland I didn't necessarily mean, yeah, I phrased that incorrectly. I just mean, like, they can puff their chest out as everybody comes to their city, you know, knowing that it's not just a gimmicky event that they happen to host in their fine city. This is an NBA city again with a contender in the East. And that's just not something that we thought we were going to be saying. Yeah, I don't know how everything comes out in the wash from an actual All-Star standpoint. Garland's certainly worthy. You know, especially his late game stuff is incredible. And, you know, we know what Evan Mobley's been doing. And again, I'm just stunned like everybody else, because it's one thing to come out
Jared
of this
Allen,
season,
Sam.
Yeah,
give Jared Allen his respect.
$100 million
He's having
man.
A great year.
He is. Well, and it's just like it's. I would have been shocked if they came out of the 2021-22 campaign with like an undeniable young core that was headed in the right direction. You know what I mean? Like that would have surprised me. To have it be this, which is like people like us admittedly having to wrap your heads around the idea that, you know, hello, it's time to talk about them actually making an impact in the playoffs. They're 30-20 as we record this pod. They, you know, they're tied for third in the East. It's, they're, you know, they're two games back of Miami for the top spot. So it's big time stuff.
They're really good defensively. Like you, exactly the concept I was talking about with Milwaukee right now. That's the Cavs this year. Like, you cannot get to the rim against them. Jared Allen has been one of the best rim protecting centers in the NBA. Evan Mobley's defense is so good for a rookie. Like, rookies don't guard like this. And they have so much size. They're playing with Markkanen. And they're such a weird team. Like, their makeup, if you just throw it on paper, it's like you have a rookie power forward who's kind of a center. You have a 7'3" who is really a stretch four. And you have a rim diving five who also blocks shots. It's like those guys working together are not supposed to make sense. And yet they've been, you know, exceeded expectations probably more than any other team in the league. And it's because, like, you look at the rim protection numbers on them, teams are shooting 60% on dunks and layups that the Cavs contest. And that's the best number for any defense in the league. And that all starts with Mobley and with Allen. I think it's a good argument for Jared Allen being, I don't know if Jared Allen should be an all-star, but it's a good reason why his name should come up in these conversations. Like, he's been great. Bickerstaff's obviously doing an extremely good job. And Garland, even with Ricky Rubio out, has been so good offensively for them, just carrying them offensively. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with the deadline. Like, they could still use another ball handler with Rubio out. I'm curious to see how they try to fill that. They have Colin Sexton's expiring and he's hurt. They have Rubio's expiring and he's hurt. Like, you could bring back about $29-30 million of salary with those two guys without sending out someone currently in their rotation if you really want to do that. So I'm very curious. They're an interesting deadline team.
Yeah, I think they should be patient. You know, again, like, if something makes sense and it's, you're just losing some expiring deals in like a future, like, second rounder or something, that's okay. But I don't think they should, like, make, and I would say the same thing about Memphis in the West. I feel like they've built young cores that, you know, we could theoretically see making some noise in the playoffs this season, but it is not time to go all in yet. I would just save the valuable bullets in the chamber. That's all I'd say. But you know, they already, you mentioned an extra ball handler. They kind of tried to nibble around the edges already. They traded for Rondo, right? That was kind of the Rubio replacement. I could see them doing something smaller like that. But, you know, what about Kevin Love, right? We thought he was going to be a buyout candidate.
Untouchable.
We thought, yeah, right? Six man now.
Untouchable in trade talks. I mean, that's another development we didn't see happening. He just was laying in the weeds during the toxic part of the Cavs turnaround, and then when they needed him, he came out and played some good ball. No, it's a fun story. I mean, is Bickerstaff coach of the year? He's on the short list, right? Like, how do you guys see the coaching component here?
Yeah, Taylor Jenkins again. You mentioned the short list. He's definitely among that.
But. Although, man, I got to be honest, Spo better be on everybody's shortlist if they end up winning the East, and he should probably win the damn thing. They've been battered by injury. You know, it's funny, all Lakers and all these other teams out here that point to their health as, you know, the excuse for not playing better. What Miami's done has been incredible, and Spo, as always, is a huge part of that. But Bickerstaff, I'm happy for
Billy
him.
Donovan.
Billy Donovan, too. Monty Williams again.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Steve Kerr's done
a
great job too. Coach of the Year is hard this year.
Don't tell the Warriors fan base, but Steve Kerr can maybe be on that
list. It's crazy.
List,
all we do is talk about the motion in the Warriors offense and how beautiful their offense is. It's like the coach who designs it doesn't get any credit for that.
Their offense has been terrible lately, Fred. You're not watching. I'm just kidding. There's a ton of good candidates. Monty, I hate to say it because I greatly enjoy him. He's not going to get a ton of love just because it's, I think, the consistency, and he should find it flattering because I think people finally respect Phoenix so much that it's like, well, you had CP and Book and DeAndre for most of the year. But no, it's going to be a tight coach of the year race. Even Philly, man, like, what if Philly is top two, top three in the East with no Ben Simmons and all the chaos around them?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Doc Rivers has done a solid job, but I would bet he'll be more on most people's like fifth, sixth on their ballot. Sure. He doesn't. Yeah.
Monty Williams screwed himself
this year.
If Monty Williams were just like, if the Suns were just like competitive last year, then he'd be coach of the year this year. But because right. the Suns were so good last year, they could be exactly the same this year, and now their improvement's not enough. Monty Williams screwed himself by being as good as he was last year, this year.
And I think I'm accurate in saying this. I'll look real quickly, but they're significantly better at this point than they were last year. Let's see. They've been incredible. They're the most dominant team out there. It's, you know, they're the only kind of consistent team out there. Even your Warriors, Slater, we thought that's who they were going to be. But they obviously have been more roller coaster these past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, 49 is an unbelievable record.
So they're 40. It took them 55 games to get to 40 wins last year. So they are certainly ahead of their pace through 49.
10 in a row again. So they've won 10 in a row as of right now. And what was the streak earlier this season? Like 17 in a row, something like that. 18 maybe.
And curiously, I'm as guilty of this, and now we're jumping over to the West as we finish up here. I'm as guilty of this as anybody. It is a hell of a thing to be that dominant and then to not have your two best players in the MVP discussion almost at all. You know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, like whether it's a list that gets written and analyzed or just talk shows, you're not hearing those two guys very much. I mean, you know, where do you think they fit in? Is that just
Don't rope me and Fred into a Chris Paul versus Devin Booker argument on who's the most valuable player on the team. They nibble at each other's votes a little bit. I think Phoenix is rightly looked at as more of a collective, right? This like stable five-man starting lineup that's really good, a deeper bench, really good coach. It's just they're a machine more than like a one-man operation. And like, to be honest, Chris Paul and Devin Booker probably should be, you know, sixth and ninth in the MVP discussion, but we just don't discuss sixth and ninth. That's still really good. How about them neither of them being an all-star starter?
They should both be all NBA this year, in my opinion. If the season ends today, you know, we'll see what happens. But if the season ends today, I'd have them both. They're the arrested development of NBA teams. Just a beautiful ensemble cast. Like, they're such a well-made roster. They have fewer weaknesses than any other roster in the league.
Yeah. Nope. They do. All right, guys, I'm going to end with this. It's a little bit of a down note, and it is out west. Just in terms of keeping up with the news, the Jazz's Joe Ingles, it came out during the recording of the pod, torn ACL. Thinking about Joe, that's terrible news for him. I actually saw him on Saturday. We caught up for a few minutes on the court and was trying to get his thoughts on the season, and you know, he was in good spirits. He actually was talking to Ryan Smith, the Jazz owner, who was there as well. So, you know, you see the smile on his face then, and then see the video of him going down and knowing that he's got a tough rehab ahead and free agency coming at him this summer as well. Terrible news for Joe and for the Jazz. I mean, he had a down year without question, but, you know, he is a major part of what they've built out there, not just on the court, but the cultural stuff and the locker room that has been through a lot and kind of survived through all that stuff. Joe has been a steadying force. So, you know, you hate to see anything like this happen. And it's another blow for a Jazz team that has obviously been having a tough time of late.
He also seemed to be maybe their like movable trade piece to
for sure.
Potentially upgrade the rotation. And obviously, you know, he could still be traded, but this completely impacts any type of value for him. So it is a bad, I mean, it's horrible for Joe Ingles, and it's a really bad timing for the Jazz, who I, you know, as they're trying to hold together this Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert era, it does feel like it's maybe slipping a little bit. And you know, it could still be rebooted, and they still hold contract control over those two good guys moving forward. But it just, you know, it's teetering on nearing a potential like reset of what we've known to be like a top tier team the last few years.
I generally agree, but I'm very curious to see how it unfolds, because that would normally, you know, that everything you said, Slater, is on point. But to me, in Utah, having control of two players as good as Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, it's, you know, somewhat analogous to Carl and John Stockton. Like, you don't know when you're going to get two elite players ever again. So if I had to guess, they're going to, you know, they are not letting go of that rope anytime soon.
Yeah. I'm not saying push the panic button to trade one of those two, but the mix around them is like proving, first of all, it's expensive, and it's proving, it seems, not capable of where they want to go. And, you know, we're talking, I'm Mike Conley, huge contract, Bogdanovich, huge contract.
Lost 11 of 13. I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was that bad. Jeez.
Yeah. 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 It's not good. We'll see. But yeah, it's again, this, the Ingles news just came at a really bad time for them.
Yep. No doubt. All right, guys, I appreciate you. I'm going to let you go on that note. We will talk to you next week. Maybe we'll jump back over to the West next week. Trade stuff at that point is going to be hot and heavy. Next recording of the pod, what will that be, on the 7th? We'll be 3 days out from the trade deadline. So, Slater, get some rest. Go listen to some Kane Brown to get your mind right. And, Freddie, appreciate you, brother.